trucking. Got my chips cashed in. Keep trucking. Like the dude of man. Together. More or less in line. Just keep trucking. Oh,
nearly 2 million semi-truck drivers haul freight on American highways on any given day. Our guest this hour will introduce us to the often rocky life of a professional trucker and will explain what it means to be a long-haul mover. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network, and we hope to hear from you. I know that we probably have more than a few truck drivers listening right now. Are you a truck driver? Or do you know someone who is, or perhaps who was? What's it like for you? What stories would you like to share? What would you like the non-truck driving public to know about life on the road? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Finn Murphy. He started working as a long-haul trucker in 1980, and he is the author of the book The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So where are you right now?
I am in Boulder, Colorado.
Is that your home base?
Sort of.
What does that mean, sort of?
It means that's where I hang my shirts and that's where I file my tax returns from.
But are you? How often are you home?
It varies. In the summertime, this is a strange break, but otherwise I'm gone probably between April and October.
Wow. And you are... you are a mover, so how is that different than any other trucker?
Yeah, so I move families for a van line. And, yeah, all truckers, it probably looks to a casual observer that, you know, all trucks look the same and probably drivers do the same job, but we're all very, very different. And that's one of the things I wanted to cover in my book is we're sort of judged in the hierarchy by what we haul, how we're paid, and what kind of trucks we drive.
And the mover is at the bottom of that hierarchy as far as truckers are concerned?
Yeah. Well, as far as the other truckers are concerned, of course, we think that we're at the top of the hierarchy, but then I'm sure everybody does. We think we're a little different for a couple reasons. One is we don't necessarily run, you know, on the interstates coast to coast, terminal to terminal. We're actually in towns and communities. And then we interact, you know, in a very sort of intimate way with the customers who are moving. And then we have to load and unload our trucks so that stuff doesn't get destroyed. So that's what we think sets us apart.
Yeah. And what are the other truckers hauling if it's not furniture?
Well, you've got hazardous material haulers. We call them suicide jockeys.
Oh, my gosh.
Then you've got flatbedders. We call them skateboarders. You've got live animal haulers. We call them chicken chokers.
Oh, no.
I'm afraid so.
So everybody's got a nickname.
Everybody's got a nickname. Oh, the whole thing is full of slang.
And now, so what are you as a furniture mover?
Oh, I left that out. Yes, we're called bedbuggers.
Bedbuggers.
And our trucks are called roach coaches.
Because you're carrying the bedbug infested roach infested couches? Is that...
Well, that's what the fraternity looks on us as. I don't really recall hauling any bedbugs, but perhaps it's happened.
Yeah. So when the book is The Long Haul, what exactly is a long haul?
So the long haul is sort of a double entendre. One of them is to make it clear that the driving I do is, you know, over long distances. So I'll move, say, a family from Connecticut to San Diego or something like that. So, yeah, I don't do short haul. I don't work, you know, within cities or something like that. And then the second part is, I started in 1980, so this has been a long haul in terms of my own personal journey as a driver and as a person.
Yeah. So you wrote that you've been interested in this since you were a teenager, 18. Now, what motivated you to start a career in the trucking industry?
Oh, it was a highly ethical choice. It was money, Joy.
Yeah, there we go.
So I started working for the local moving company owned by Mr. Callahan, who was a congregant at St. Catherine of Siena Church, where my family went. I come from an Irish Catholic family. I have seven brothers and sisters. And in the summers between college, we were required to get jobs. And so I got a job with Callahan Brothers as a mover. And I found that I just loved that kind of work.
Yeah. What did you love about it?
A couple things. It's a very skilled occupation, even though maybe it doesn't look like that from the outside. It's got manual labor, very sustained manual labor. I mean, my work days, you know, run from 12 to 14 hours loading the truck. And then there's the whole sort of tact and diplomacy required to help a family navigate through, you know, a move, a relocation to another area.
Yeah. So, it's not just you have to assure them that you're not going to lose their china or something.
Yeah, or the truck will disappear, or that we'll just throw everything in there.
So have you ever lost their china, though?
I haven't lost any china, and I haven't lost a trailer yet. Although I have had some damage here and there over the years.
Yeah, well, so you like the mix of I guess personal relationships with the people and the hard work of it all.
Yes, and working with my crews, so there's sort of a camaraderie, there's sort of a male tribal thing going on when a group of men work together, you know, with sustained manual labor over a period of time, and that's another really positive aspect of it.
All right, you just said a group of men. Aren't more and more women getting involved in trucking?
There's more and more women driving, yes. In the moving industry itself, very few women. I mean, I could probably count them on one hand.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because we have to carry, you know, 500-pound gun safes downstairs.
Oh.
That's probably one reason. But in the regular trucking world, you see a lot of husband and wife teams now, which I never used to see before. And that's a nice development, because when women are around, I think men tend to behave slightly better.
Well, speaking of husband and wife teams, what does this do to your family?
Well, I'm divorced, Joey, like all truckers.
No. Well, I was going to say it's hard on a marriage, isn't it?
I've met very few truckers that haven't been divorced one way or another. Yeah, it's difficult. You know, you need to work that out in your relationship, that somebody's going to be gone for months at a time. Now, that can be very pleasant, depending on your circumstances, but it can also be, you know, challenging.
Yeah. So I'm going to share a secret that my husband, not really a secret, I've mentioned this before, my husband, who has been retired now after 40 years in broadcasting, he, when he was younger, wanted to be a truck driver. He had a friend who, I guess, was driving some Peterbilt or something, and he was just fascinated by that, and he wanted to do that. But then the Vietnam War and life got in the way. He did not become the truck driver that he dreamed to be way back when. And then upon retirement, he even flirted with the idea of that being the encore career, but did not. I think he had kind of a romantic view of this life on the road. How romantic is it, in your opinion?
So one of the things I think I try to cover in the book is to try to unromanticize some of this. You know, a 3,000-mile slog from Connecticut to San Diego isn't particularly romantic, especially if you have to do it in 6 days.
Yeah.
On the other hand, especially for a mover like me, I go where the moves go, so I'm off the interstates a lot. Excuse me.
And I'm going to let you take a drink of water, and I will remind listeners that we are talking with Finn Murphy. He is author of The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road. And we are getting his perspective of what it's like to be a long-haul trucker. And we are welcoming your questions for him. We're welcoming your own experiences. Perhaps you are a truck driver as well. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We know that thousands of truck drivers listen to public radio as they drive, because we get calls from truck drivers, and many of them also have observations about life in general, we'd love to hear those. Maybe even observations about how other people drive, or about the best truck stops in Wisconsin, whatever the case may be. We'd love to hear from you too. Okay, so Finn, you were saying that you wanted to try to bust that myth that the that being a truck driver is a romantic profession, because it's not so romantic to drive 6 days straight across the country. So how come it isn't? That would be cool to see all, you know, to see the country, to see the landscape, to, you know, talk to people in the small towns along the way. That's not romantic?
Well, you don't get to talk to people in small towns along the way most of the time if you're just, you know, running the interstate and trying to get there. There is the romance of seeing the country, and that's for sure, and that's actually never faded for me. Some of my favorite places are places that most people have never even been to. Eastern Washington is gorgeous, it's got a, I don't know why that isn't a popular spot, but, I mean, you've got all of these vineyards, and you've got the mountains rising up. It kind of looks like France in a way, so mm-hmm. I do get that kind of thing. But running that six-day slog across is very difficult. And then if you're a freight driver, then you have to just turn around and do it again. And then you're back in New Jersey, and then you got to turn around and do it again. So you might do four cross-country trips in a month, and that really does start to get wearing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I could see how it would be beautiful the first time or two, but then when it becomes the second decade or two, then it might get a little old.
Yes, it does. And then, you know, you have congestion in urban areas and other things, too, which add to the frustration, I would say.
We will take a short pause, and then we will start taking some calls for our guest, Finn Murphy, author of The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road. You can share your tales of life on the road as well at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org.
But the driver was missing, and the search had been abandoned, 'cause the weather had everything stalled, and they had checked all the houses.
We are talking about truck driving, talking with the author of The Long Haul, Finn Murphy, and we are welcoming your questions for him and your own observations at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Boy, that song Convoy was from 1977, I think. Do truckers still use that two-way radio, Finn?
Oh, the CB? Not as much as they used to. My CB handle actually is U-Turn. Everybody gives themselves their own name. And my name is that because as I go into residential areas all the time where trucks aren't supposed to go, I'm always doing U-turns. So that was my name. I think so. The CB radio craze back in the 70s, that was like the first social media.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's pretty much gone now. You still hear some CB talk around the truck stops. That's usually people with something to sell. Something often nefarious.
Right. I think I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that, I mean, and I mean, we can be frank on this show that are there still people, is prostitution a big deal on the road still?
In pockets, which I try to avoid. There's a truck stop outside of Chicago that's well known for that. There's another one outside of Los Angeles. It's sort of tragic to see that.
Yeah.
And it's not something that I'm involved with in any way at all.
What about convoys? Do convoys happen?
Convoys still happen. Yes. Oh, it's the best way to drive. I get in the middle of a convoy, it'd be maybe 9 or 10 trucks. I'll be in the middle. We'll be doing 65. And then you've got eyes in front of you looking for things on the road. You've got eyes behind you. It's a wonderful, relaxed way to drive. And then you're usually talking with the guys that are within your sphere.
Oh, and so if someone's looking out for Smokey?
Smokey, yeah. Or actually, what we're looking for is more road hazards.
Oh.
A thing we call gators. You've probably seen a gator. Maybe you don't know what it is.
No.
It's a piece of retreaded tire that's in the middle of the road.
Oh, yeah.
Looks just like a black alligator. So we call those gators. We're looking for traffic stops. We're looking for, like, if you go over a crest of a hill and the traffic's all stopped right there. So that's really what we're looking for.
Let's. We have full lines, I'm very happy to report. So let's go to James in Milwaukee, who is also a truck driver. James?
Joy, it's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for calling in.
Be thankful that your husband didn't fulfill his fantasy, because he would have never have met you.
That's, well, yeah, you never know. But you're right. That's probably true. They say your whole life can change if you miss a bus, and he missed that bus. So.
Well, that's right.
Yep. So what about your life as a truck driver? What do you want people to know?
40 years, coming up on 5 million miles. I love America. I love the scenery. I can park this truck and view sunsets and sunrises, million-dollar views, and don't have to pay the taxes on it. I do have a love relationship with the industry. I also jokingly refer to myself as a bipolar, germophobic, scumbag truck driver. The bipolar part is a love-hate relationship with. You could have 4 or 5 uneventful weeks out here on the road, and you got something planned on your way home to spend some time with your family, and something happens where you break down or your load cancels or something.
And then you hate it.
And then you hate it.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise you love it, the love-hate relationship. The germophobic is kind of self-explanatory. It, with many public restrooms, it sucks being a germophobe out here. And the scumbag truck driver was in a reference to a party I attended one time, and there was some flirtation going across the room with a young lady, and guy came up and introduced himself to me and talked to me and asked me what I was doing, and later I found out it was his sister. His sister come up to talk to me, and as he grabbed her arm and pulled her away from me, he said, "Don't even think about it, sis. He's nothing but a scumbag truck driver." And I wanted America to know that this industry controls this country. I mean, the grocery, every store you go to. I could do a whole hour with you on just my positive aspects of this industry that I love very much. And unfortunately, much of America looks down upon us for what we do.
James, thank you for what you do, and thank you for the call. And I think that gives us a lot to react to, Finn. What do you agree with James that maybe truck drivers don't have the reputation they deserve, because it's a noble and important job?
It is a noble and important job, but it's also mysterious. And then the only time really that four-wheeler drivers will see truck drivers will be in a truck stop. And that's a very hermetically sealed world unto its own, and it looks strange and odd. And frankly, some of the drivers look strange and odd. So I think it brings up a sort of preconceived notion that I don't think is quite correct. I mean, James was, you know, very articulate. He's done 5 million miles, which is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. His funny remark about being a germaphobe, I wanted to ask him how he keeps his sleeper, because every driver I've ever seen keeps their sleeper compartment pristine and the sheets folded and everything nice and perfect.
Are you there, James?
Yes, I am.
Do you keep your cab pristine and perfect?
I'm not saying it's perfect, but I do keep a tidy cab and use a lot of Lysol on my shoes when I come back into the truck and stuff. And it's just, you know, it's, I don't know, it just comes with the territory.
How about that Subway lettuce product? Is that all over the floor by your feet, James?
No, there's nothing on the floor.
Well, what is this Subway lettuce product, Finn?
Well, so truck stop restaurants, years ago, everybody used to say, oh, go eat where the truckers eat, because that's where the best food is.
And that's a big lie, isn't it?
It's a outdated myth, is what I would say.
Okay.
see, this is the diplomacy.
Yeah, that's right.
The truck stop restaurants have been closing at a massively rapid rate throughout the country, and they've been replaced with Subway franchises and fast food. So it's very difficult, especially if you drive a long trail. I drive a 53-foot trailer. There's not that many places I can go.
Well, so yeah, so mostly you're saying that I don't know, that special little truck stop in the middle of Iowa, for example, there's very few of those around anymore, and it's mainly McDonald's and Subway?
It's mainly, yep, it's usually Wendy's and Subway. There are some special little truck stops still left, and on I-80 in Iowa is actually the perfect example. You've got the Iowa 80 truck stop there in Wolcott, which bills itself as being the largest truck stop in the world. It's got a dentist's office. It's got a barber shop. It's got a medical facility. And it's got several restaurants. So that's one of the places that's still around.
You know, speaking of I-80 going through Iowa, we were just on that a couple of months ago. Oh, my goodness. I'm not gonna gripe about all the truck traffic on there, but there is a lot of truck traffic on I-80, more so than any other interstate I've been on, it seems. Is that right? Does that seem to be the case, that one is the one of the most traveled?
I would say it would be, yeah. Because it's, first thing, you have a lot of trucks stopping there because they're coming out of urban areas from Chicago and other points east. So it's where things finally relax a little bit in central Iowa.
Yeah.
And then it's the major, you know, it's the major east-west route in the United States.
And the other thing, though, is that we drive a Jeep, or I should say Rob drives a Jeep, and we were getting blown around. The winds that hit go across I-80 and hit, if you, they hit a box-like vehicle, it's really hard to drive on I-80 if it's a windy day. Have you found that?
Oh, yeah. You should see it in Wyoming. Routinely, trucks are blown over in Wyoming on I-80. In fact, empty trucks now, I just heard this the other day. They have those concrete barriers that you have that you see on the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Empty trucks going through Wyoming, they actually put ballast on the trucks so that they don't blow over. So it's very hard to stay in your lane, very hard to stay on the road.
Yeah. So has your profession brought you to Wisconsin ever?
I've been to Wisconsin. I've moved people out of Milwaukee. Manitowoc, I think you say that?
Manitowoc.
Yeah, usually in the suburbs. So what I do now is I move corporate executives mostly. So that's, I'm in the leafy suburbs most of the time.
Ah, so you come, though, to, all right, the executive in the leafy suburb of Milwaukee wants to move to San Diego, and you'll pick up all the stuff in Milwaukee and drive to San Diego. That's your gig.
I'll do everything. I'll pack all the cartons. I'll clean up the breakfast dishes at the other end. I'll make the beds. We're a full service move, and most of the time our customers don't do anything. And these moves are paid by the company most of the time.
Yeah, we are talking with Finn Murphy, who is a long haul trucker. He is the author of the book "The Long Haul: A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road." And we are welcoming your questions for him and your own tales, if you have them, from life on the road. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Jackie in Sawyer County is with us next. Hi, Jackie.
Yes, good morning. I'm a trucker also. I used to do long haul, and now I do kind of local. But my comment and question is, you already kind of covered the food situation and how, and you didn't mention it, but how unhealthy it makes the living, the lifestyle as a trucker, because you can't get good, healthy food. Unless, like me, when I was over the road, I did cooking in my truck, and I was just kind of curious because I see a lot of these furniture haulers. They have these extended cabs with built-in kitchens and stuff. So I was kind of curious what you had. And do you have an extended truck? Do you have a kitchen set up? How do you handle the really lousy food situation?
Yeah, great. I'm glad you called, Jackie, because I did want to get to that. And I didn't really. Finn, do you have a built-in kitchen?
No, I don't. But Jackie's mentioning, so what you see with a lot of furniture movers like me, and you see it in specialized car haulers too, with these extended cabs in the back, and they'll have an easy chair. They'll have a kitchen set up. Sometimes they'll have a chemical toilet. I don't have those kinds of things myself, but I do have a barbecue grill in my equipment department, and I do grill my own steaks or something when I have time out there. But Jackie's point is just so well taken. You can't eat properly out there. And I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said, well, maybe they should have an exercise room in the truck stops, and then, you know, have an elliptical machine or something. And I just laughed. I just thought, well, all the drivers I know, they would just hang their towel on the elliptical machine like everybody else.
You know who said that to me was, again, my husband, who wanted to be a truck driver and then is also quite into fitness, and he thought that maybe having some sort of ways for truckers to you know, exercise or be fit at various stops would be helpful. But you're saying you don't think anybody would take advantage of that.
Well, let's let Jackie answer that. What do you think, Jackie?
No, we really don't have time. You put in a 14-hour day, you eat your meal, and you go to bed.
Yeah. So, Jackie, what about, do you find even the truck stops that still exist, the ones that want to, you know, give you a good home-cooked meal, are they crummy food too?
Mostly because it's greasy, deep-fried food that you get, even in the sit-down restaurants. The really good restaurants are rare. Yeah. If you want a good exercise in being in trucking, I would suggest either being a flatbedder or a furniture hauler. Then you get your exercise in every day.
Oh, because you move the furniture around, Finn.
Yeah, I'm running around for 10 or 12 hours a day, in and out of the truck, up and down the stairs in the house. So, yeah, I'm not looking for... I'm not looking to run on the treadmill after work.
Yeah, so what tips do you have for other truckers, Finn, if they do want to at least eat the best they can? You don't have any.
Get another job.
Really, because it's just not. Well, what about you? You stop at a, I take it you stop maybe at a rest stop, and you haul out that grill if you can.
Yeah, but I have to shop for the food. So, and they've changed all of the landscaping around in big parking lots now. Like if you go to an Albertsons or a Safeway or something, they've got all these islands and trees in there now. I've got a 53-foot trailer. They don't want trucks parking in there. So it's very difficult even to get access to a supermarket, even if I had the time to find one.
Oh, yeah, that's too bad. All right, well, thanks, Jackie, for the call. And Jackie brings up that he used to do long haul, but now he does the short routes. You mentioned that in the very beginning. So a truck driver that might just, you might just be going from one city in Wisconsin to another, is that a short route, or is it just in the city itself?
I consider that short haul. If you were going from Milwaukee to Green Bay, that would be short haul. Then, you know, probably most of your truck drivers are driving, you know, within, you know, the Milwaukee metro area, and that would certainly be considered short haul. And those guys are home every night, and that's probably the decision that Jackie made.
Yeah. Boy, you know what? That's got to be hard, though. How big is the truck that you're driving, for example, and how hard is it to do that U-turn in the leafy suburb?
Well, I get good at it. Yeah, I go to places where you have trouble with a riding lawnmower, and I've got my truck is about 72 feet long when it's all connected together.
That's big, yeah.
That's one of the reasons that movers consider ourselves, you know, at the top of the pyramid, so to speak, is we put our trucks where the trucks aren't supposed to go all the time.
So what do you think about roundabouts or traffic circles?
I love roundabouts.
You do?
I do. I know everybody's, the roundabout thing is a big issue.
I thought that truckers didn't like those.
I like them most of the time. It depends how they're engineered. So sometimes they have a big lip when you go around because we can't make it on the pavement all the way around on a lot of roundabouts. So we have to go up a little bit along to the side. But if the lip is small enough and if the radius of the roundabout is broad enough, then it's so much better because you don't have to stop.
Trucker Mike called in. He couldn't stay with us. He says public radio is everything to long-haul truckers because you can only listen to music for so long. Well, at least Trucker Mike says. So what do you listen to, Finn? Or do you agree that you need to have some good talk shows or such to listen to because you can only listen to music for so long?
Well, this might be a little counterintuitive, but every trucker I've ever met listens to public radio.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all because of the number who have called in. But
yeah, I'm sure. And there's a couple reasons for that. For one, I mean, you've got varied programming. Personally, I like to schedule my driving for fresh air if I can.
No, great.
I don't like to miss fresh air. The other thing is that because of the network, you pick up another station as you're driving. So we have continuity with public radio. So I can go from Indiana through Missouri into Kansas, and I'll have public radio all the way through. And that's just wonderful.
We are talking with Finn Murphy. He started working as a long-haul trucker in 1980, and he is the author of the book, The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road. And we are welcoming your questions for him. And if you're a truck driver or know someone who is, maybe you have a story you'd like to share or an observation, or maybe you'd like the general public to know something that you don't think we know about truckers. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll continue talking about trucking after this.
You know, a lot of folks stop at truck stops. They just naturally think they should, 'cause they figure any place a truck driver eats, the food's just got to be good. So they go out there amongst all them truck drivers.
We are talking about truck driving, and as we learned, that truck stop probably doesn't have the best food in the world. Our guest is Finn Murphy. He is the author of The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road. He's sharing with us what it's like to be a long-haul trucker. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to the phones, and Tracy in Oak Creek is with us next. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. My question for your guest is what he's been driving for a number of years, so I'm assuming he's used to the old regulations as well as the new ones. It's my understanding that regulations have been imposed on drivers, truck drivers, in regards to how long they can have their wheels moving and how long their wheels must be stopped. I'm wondering his opinion on that change.
Yes, so what's happening now is actually on December 18th of this year, all commercial vehicles doing long haul will have to or required to have electronic logging devices, and that's going to be a huge change for all of us. Right now, I use paper logs, so I log my every time there's a change of duty status or anything else during your day, you need to make that entry, and then you need to track your progress across the country, and then that gets checked at weigh stations and just on various checks. And the electronic logs are going to make that so that when you're out of hours, you have to pull over at that point. And it's already causing problems. I don't know if you've seen that there's more trucks in the entry ramps and exit ramps now.
I have.
And yes, and that's because in the rest areas. And that's because of these electronic logging devices. It's taking out the sort of autonomy that a driver has to find a safe place to stop.
So that's what's going on. They're stopping on that exit or entrance because they're not supposed to be driving anymore.
Right. There's a machine that tells you that you have to stop. And that's, actually, I believe the machine will shut you off at some certain point thereafter.
But, you know, what about the need for safety, though? We don't want truck drivers on the road 24/7 and falling asleep and maybe crashing into something.
And I agree with that completely. It's just a question of where that balance point is.
Yeah.
I think that a professional driver out there who's a calm, imperturbable driver and is trying to be safe, like that driver that called in earlier, he's got 5 million miles behind him. I think he's the judge of where a safe place would be to go to stop, a safe place to be to change his status of service.
Yeah. So how do you, it's got to get a little monotonous, and then we always hear about like road hypnosis and such. How do you stay alert and safe while driving?
I get used to it. So we're allowed to drive 11 hours a day now within a 14-hour window, and we're required to take breaks every 4 hours. And I'm pretty wired in. So between public radio and audiobooks, and then local radio, I don't really have a problem staying awake. But occasionally it happens. And the beauty of my truck or most trucks is I've got a bed right behind me. It's only 2 feet behind me, so I'll pull over somewhere safe and I'll take one of those 12-minute trucker naps, and that usually takes care of it.
Oh, great. And when you are on the road for that 6-day long haul, what are you typically sleeping at a rest stop, or how do you do that?
I'll try to sleep at a truck stop if I can, because they'll have showers.
Oh, yeah.
They'll have something to eat. The thing is, nobody wants truck stops. So it's what they call a locally unwanted land use. and nobody wants them near anywhere. So there's not that many of them. And if you don't get into one at, say, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, well, let's talk about I-80 in Iowa. If you don't get into one in the early afternoon, it's full. And then you have to do a rest area. And then after the rest areas, when those are full, then you have to pull off the highway or pull off to the side. It's not an ideal situation.
Is there something that you would suggest to make it safer and better for our long-haul truckers?
Yes, more truck stops.
So local communities shouldn't have this stigma against truck stops, and entrepreneurs could make some money off a truck stop?
Well, I understand the local concern.
Mm-hmm.
You've got, you know, you might have several hundred trucks. They might be idling all night to keep the heat on. The air quality around truck stops is not good. In certain places, it brings in an element of individual that you might not want to have in your neighborhood. So, yeah, I understand the local concern for sure. In other countries, truck stops are run by the highway department, and that's kind of cool. Kansas, for example, has some beautiful truck stops that are run by the Kansas DOT. That works.
Oh, that's an idea. Let's go to Steve in Central Wisconsin. Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
Good. Are you a trucker?
Yes, ma'am. I've been out here since 1990, off and on.
Yeah, and how's it going?
Right now I'm doing a restart, 34-hour restart, behind a place that I picked up a load yesterday at, and I hope they don't run me off. I've got roughly 16 more hours before I can leave, and I'll get a fresh 70 back.
That sounds complicated. So the restart, tell us what a restart is, Steve.
Restart is you sit somewhere for 34 hours. You have to have about an average of about 170 hours a week before you're legible to have one, but a lot of companies do it before. I stay out here 21 days out of a month and try not to do a restart because it's taking money out of my pocket for driving. I got over here in 2.5 hours from Chicago, which I thought was pretty amazing, yesterday afternoon. And they loaded me right up, but they told me I could park in the back. They didn't say how long. You can't move the truck for 34 hours. You're limited to a truck stop or wherever you're at. I'm in an industrial place. There's no place to eat or I can walk if I want to walk 2.5 miles to a restaurant, but I carry food on the truck.
Ah, gosh, so this is a mandatory, you've got to stay there for 34 hours because of the rules.
Yes.
I bet you don't like that.
No, I don't. You know, I was actually thinking about starting this morning at about 4 o'clock and going up to the TA in Illinois, but then that would start my clock over again, so I'd have to wait longer, so... As long as they don't kick me out back here, I'll be all right. The only thing running on the truck right now is the reefer unit. The tractor's turned off, and then it's pretty cool since we had a nice rainstorm come through here last night and everything. I'm in Prairie something.
Prairie du Sac, I bet.
You're
just north of Madison?
Pleasant Prairie.
Pleasant Prairie. You're in the Kenosha area, in the far southeastern corner of Wisconsin, I think.
Oh, yeah, and this is where y'all have snow in the wintertime, and I don't like it.
We do have snow in the wintertime, that's right.
Steve, do you have an electronic logging device, Steve?
Yes, I do.
So you can't even start your truck?
Oh, I can start it. I can put it on Opti-Idle where it starts and stops, you know, to run the air conditioning and keeping the batteries charged for my cooler. Which I've got ham and cheese sandwiches, you know, and iced tea and stuff like that.
Yeah, but he has to stay there apparently because whatever those restart rules are all about. And it sounds like Steve told my producer that, you know, these rules are made up by lawmakers who have no clue what the industry is like. Finn, you want to comment on that?
Well, I wanted to comment on the romance of being a truck driver. So Steve's a day and a half at an industrial park.
Yep.
And he's afraid that he might get kicked out, and he's got to walk 2.5 miles to get something to eat, and he's there twiddling his thumbs, and that doesn't sound all that romantic.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. And so, Steve, are you going to be, once you get to start, where are you headed?
I'm headed to Texas, but I don't want to take the load all the way there because it doesn't deliver until the 3rd of July, and I can have it there probably on the 2nd or maybe the 1st. You know, it's 1,048 miles. So once I get time back, which will give me a 11-hour drive, if I take a 2-hour break, it'll run me to 14. But I try to stay away from the 11. I usually do somewhere between 8.5 and 9 and 10 hours a day, unless I just have to be there, you know. If you do 11 hours a day, you run out of time before the week's over with. And so you'll have to start over again.
I get it. It sounds very complicated, Finn, and you really have to be kind of a math wizard and really good about your time management and figuring, you know, all this out, don't you?
Well, with your hours of service, you do. You have to be almost a mathematician, which is why they brought in the electronic logging devices to begin with, because a lot of drivers were having trouble with it. And frankly, I've been doing this since 1980. The rules change all the time. I do paper logs, but I still have trouble with it constantly. And you know, Steve's bringing up this notion that he's got extra time, so he wants to get rid of his load so that he can get another one, but he might end up sitting around for 2 days down in Dallas waiting for the 3rd. So now he's waiting around for 2 days up in Wisconsin, he's waiting around for 2 days down in Dallas, and, you know, this eats into your revenue, so you have to plan it like a general.
Yeah. And speaking of revenue, I mean, this can be a... it can be lucrative, or is it mostly hand-to-mouth, or just somewhere in the middle?
I'd say, and Steve wants to pipe in on this, it's mostly hand-to-mouth. Most drivers make between about $36,000 and $38,000 a year, and that's somebody who's away all the time. Where it can get lucrative is if you can bring a value-added service to something other than driving, and that's why furniture movers, we get paid a lot more than a standard freight hauler. And then if you have a flatbed with specialized equipment, you can be doing that, and that will be fairly lucrative as well. If you haul specialized automobiles, that's another one. But most drivers are hauling box trucks, getting paid by the mile or getting paid by the hour, and this is not a well-paid occupation.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Will in Mineral Point is with us. Hi, Will.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What is your story about life on the road? You're a trucker too, or no?
No, I'm not. But I used to. I'm from Mineral Point, Wisconsin, but I went to school out in Arizona, and so I used to do a 2-day, 24-hour drive back when I was in my teens and 20s to get home, or come home for Christmas break or whatever. So I was on the road a lot at night, and kind of observed, truckers communicating with each other with their lights and other things, and I really came to appreciate what they do and how they do it, and that they're out at night a lot, and it's really dangerous. But I was always sort of curious what sort of crazy things that truckers would see at night, whether it was something as common as accidents on the road, or herd of buffalo on the road, or something like a UFO, or ghosts, or any stories like that. So I'd be interested to hear what's the craziest thing that you've ever seen on the road.
Good question.
That is a good question. A couple things. First thing is, it's really important to remember that because we're up so high, we can see everything that people do in their cars.
Yep.
Everything. Not as much at night, but certainly in the daytime. And I guess one of the things I would say is, because we can see everything, we know what people are doing. And I think Americans are good drivers in general and courteous drivers in general. But we'd all be better drivers if we just drove when we drove instead of doing something else while we drive. And as far as I can tell, everybody's doing something else. Either they're eating or they're spilling a drink or they're disciplining the kid in the back seat. But the most common thing that people do in their cars, other than putting on makeup and sending texts, is they're working on the relationship with the person in the passenger seat. And you can see that from the body language. There's a lot of relationships being worked out in cars.
Really?
Sometimes they're romantically relationships and working in a good way, which is also distracting.
Yeah.
So I would say just drive when you're driving.
Right. And you are, though, seeing a lot of people using their phones, too, I bet?
Constant. It's constant. Now, for a commercial driver, I think it's a $1,000 fine if I'm holding a phone to my ear. And maybe we should pass that fine on to four-wheel drivers, too.
Any other, like, really a crazy thing, like, you know, the buffalo in the middle of the road or anything?
Yeah, so animals is the big one. I was going through I-80 in Pennsylvania one night many years ago, and I saw this truck off on the side of the road sort of catty-cornered, and the lights were on, and something didn't look right. And I stopped and pulled over, and I walked up to this other truck, and the whole front windshield had been crashed in. And I looked into the cab, and there was a deer.
Oh my gosh!
In the driver's seat. And then I heard the sirens coming in from behind me, and I didn't explore it anymore. But the deer had come right through the windshield of this truck, and probably he never saw him, and probably they're both dead.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Will. Frank in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, it's not so much a question as a comment. When I was younger, during the mid-60s and 70s, I hitchhiked all over the country, and always the best rides were with truckers, really comfortable seats and great conversation. And I always tried to thank them when I was dropped off, but I'm just calling to say a big thank you in case I missed anybody. And I guess I do have a question. Things have changed a lot over the last 40 years. Do truckers still pick up hitchhikers the way they used to?
Well, I don't. But I used to back in the earlier days when there was a whole cadre of young people going around the country with their thumbs in the air in the 70s and the 80s. And then that changed somewhere, and I'm not sure how or why that did. But the kind of people you see now on the side of the road or at a truck stop looking for a ride, they just looked a little bit too gnarly for me to take a chance with.
Yeah. So as we're closing out the hour, what would you like our listeners to know, our non-truck driving listeners to know about the life of a truck driver?
So here's what I would like people to know. We're not a harmonized group of rednecks. It's a very diverse group, and it's getting more diverse all the time, especially with the husband and wife teams coming on. We're regular people. We have aspirations. We have families. We have emotional lives. And it would be nice if people might just look at us that way instead of any other way.
Yeah. And as for the stigma that some truck drivers, the public has for some truck drivers, you hope that that's going to end sometime soon?
It would be nice to see. I mean, there are those, you know, cowboys out there. And there is, you know, a rough element in this world that you know, I'm not going to deny. But I don't think that element is in the majority. Yeah. And I think any subculture, whether it's, you know, lawyers or broadcasters or truck drivers, you know, there's going to be some bad apples there, but that's not all of us.
So where are you headed next?
I am headed to Flagstaff, Arizona.
Well, enjoy. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Joy.
Finn Murphy started working as a long-haul trucker in 1980. He is author of The Long Haul, A Trucker's Tales of Life on the Road. It's been fun, and thanks for all of your calls, too. Thanks to Nyasia Ellison and to August Brown for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
But it seems like a month since I kissed my baby goodbye. I could have a lot of women, but I'm not like some of the guys. I could find one to hold me tight.